Welcome back to Vanguardia America and the final segment of today's show. This week, we pay a visit to Rosie's House, the largest free music education program in the country. Founded in 1996 by Rosie and Woody Schertz, Rosie's House has grown from teaching 15 students in a small renovated house in South Phoenix to one of the most respected free music programs in the country, serving more than 500 K-12 students annually. A few weeks ago, I met with CEO Becky Bell Ballard, who walked me through their new $6.5 million 15,000 square foot facility near downtown Phoenix, just ahead of a public grand opening celebration that is planned for November the 5th. Today, we'll hear the first of a two-part report about Rosie's House and the work it does teaching children not only how to play and appreciate the musical arts, but how to live life and take pride in their own talents and creativity. Here's my interview with Becky Bell Ballard.
Well, if you don't mind, let's just take a little tour. I'd love to, because I haven't been here, obviously.
Yeah.
First of all, how long have you been in this space?
Just a little over a year or so. Okay. And then we've just finished the campaign. So we just finished raising the funds to make the purchase. So
yeah,
$6.6 million, we just finished that.
So yeah.
This is our first year kind of fully operational in the building post-COVID.
And just describe for me, it is 15,000
square feet. Yeah, so the building, the new building for Rosie's House is 15,000 square feet, located right in downtown Phoenix, the corner of 9th Street and Jefferson. And it's a wonderful asset here in this historic neighborhood as well.
And how long have you been running the organization?
I've been with Rosie's House for 14 years.
14 years? Mm-hmm. Okay, great. I'll just follow you then.
Yeah,
maybe,
absolutely.
Although I'll have to be a little bit close so I can get good sound.
Okay, so awesome. So yeah, in this area here, we're entering into the Youth and Family Center. This space is where we have all of our families wait while their kiddos are in class.
Mm-hmm. Right away, there's something a little bit unique about this in that most spaces I go with their school, like parents drop them off and just leave. So is this kind of intentional? I mean, that you have?
It is intentional because we do a whole program around food service as well. So it's one of our, what we call wraparound services. And it's in collaboration and partnership with St. Mary's Food Bank as well as BHHS Legacy Foundation. And okay, what it does is provides a free meal to any child that enters the doors under 18.
Oh, wow.
So
okay,
it's a really great resource for our families, making it, you know, coming to Rosie's House a thing that's easier for families because they're coming after school with a large, you know, family, and having the opportunity to get a meal is really beneficial.
Yeah, and it is a free after-school program.
100% free program, yep.
And is it because the school aims to a kind of serve low-income families?
So our program is all about making sure there's equity in the arts.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're 100% free for families who would financially not be able to afford the opportunity. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what
but
we're all
do you have other families? Like it's, you know,
no,
maybe predominantly it's sort of low-income families who need.
No, it's 100% families that wouldn't have the opportunity otherwise.
Huh. Okay.
That's our whole mission,
right?
Being free and accessible.
And is that as a result of the founder?
You know,
was it like her choice at the time to try to do that?
Yeah, that was really her vision. So we were founded, our first home, much smaller than this building, much smaller than our 15,000 square feet.
I think I went there once.
Really?
Yeah,
oh my
yeah,
gosh.
Years ago.
It was in the Oakland neighborhood of Phoenix, right by the state capitol.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a three-bedroom house, and it was... We had 15 students that started in that program. It was really Rosie's vision that students would take up where she left off. So she was unable to continue music lessons because of World War II, and that was a devastating tragedy for her. And so this program really... She envisioned having an opportunity where students that had maybe not war stopping them, but other circumstances stopping them from participating, she would make sure that financially that wouldn't be a barrier to participate.
Well, let's see. I'll keep following you here now. So, okay.
We're going to go in the performance hall.
Okay.
So this is the largest space in the building for gathering and for instruction. And this space is used during the week for classes, our largest ensembles. So our band, which is a great program, our mariachi program, our string orchestra, as well as our choirs all rehearse in this space.
Mm-hmm.
And because the space is so large, we've been able to expand those ensembles, which is really the whole premise and reason for us to find our own building was the opportunity to expand our programs.
Okay, great.
And then we can go back out and go left, and I'll show you more of the classroom spaces.
Mm-hmm. How many children come through this program every year?
So we have 550 students enrolled, and each week we do about 800 lessons, so many students have more than one lesson. So overall this year we're anticipating 25,000 free music lessons for the community.
25,000, okay. But 500 and something enrolled, and it's pretty much that way year round?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And do a lot of those kids, do they cycle in and out or?
No, so our retention, our average retention rate is 5 years for our students.
Oh, wow.
So it's a pretty, once a student is involved, they're part of our family.
Okay, great.
So we'll keep walking through here. Hi, how are you?
How are you doing?
These are some of our classrooms. This is a group class. So the beautiful thing about this building is we were able to design to different sizes of programming.
Uh-huh.
So we have our large rooms, our medium rooms, and our small rooms. So we have our ensembles, our group classes, and our one-on-one section.
But what does it take to run this? I mean, what kind of a budget annually do you have for this?
Yeah, so our budget is about $1.8 million annually.
Uh-huh.
And how
many employees do you have?
So we have 23 teachers.
23 teachers.
And then we have 8 full-time staff and 2 part-time staff.
Okay, and is it a mix, in terms of the teachers, are they all full-time or is it like a mix of?
The teachers are all part-time, actually.
Oh, they're all part-time.
Yeah.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Great. Well,
and many of them teach in different school systems throughout the valley.
Uh-huh.
Some have private studios and teach at Rosie's house. Some are working musicians and teach at Rosie's house. But our teachers are our largest expense for the program.
Yeah. And then let's see, this room is our Digital Creativity Center. It's actually our Burton Digital Creativity Center.
Burton?
Yeah.
Named after?
Named after the Burton Family Foundation.
Okay.
Yeah, and so this room is so exciting for Rosie's house because we had nothing like it in our previous location. It's a dedicated lab space for learning really cutting edge technology for composing music, recording music, doing live sound amplification. So this computer lab, each of these instruments, computer stations, is about a $4,000
But they instrument. Are, but they really are instruments, like you
they
said.
Are
I mean, they are musical instruments.
That just... That's such a good point. So what we, in envisioning the programming alongside our community for this space, we wanted to make sure we had relevant programming. And so knowing that our high school and middle school students are really into tech and really into beat making and things of that nature, we wanted to make sure we had a space that reflected that interest. So that was the grand idea behind this lab, and we've seen really great participation. Our teacher is...
Who's your teacher? Because that's really interesting.
Yeah,
who's
so
that?
His name is Jacob, and he actually teaches also at Metro Arts in Phoenix,
mm-hmm.
and he is very motivating for the students and just a wonderful educator.
And this is like his thing,
digital music creation. Digital music is his thing.
Yeah. That's wow. That's really fortunate.
Yeah.
I mean, is it hard to find teachers like that?
It is. It's
because I imagine saxophone players are like a dime a dozen.
Well, I think it's probably becoming more common
uh-huh.
as this technology is now more a part of the education space. But the fantastic thing is that Jacob can teach our students both the musical language and how to code. So in this lab, they're learning 2 languages.
Oh, really. That's really fascinating.
So it is, really.
So they'd have a skill that even if they didn't stick with music as a career, that they could apply otherwise.
Absolutely. Yeah,
that's
that
really
interest in tech and the ability to code and problem solve and creatively think through situations, that's what's being taught here in the digital lab.
Are there age groups that you concentrate in certain areas necessarily?
Yeah, that's a great question. So each instrument area has a certain age where the student can start the program.
Mm.
So for digital music, that is a 12-year-old student. For our piano lab, that's a 6-year-old student.
Perfect. So this is new, with the building.
With the building.
How far ahead does it kind of take you in terms of the capabilities in terms of your teaching, I mean, to have something like this?
So the lab is something that we're seeing as a resource for all of our students. So the digital music classes happen in here, but we're also opening up the lab for other teachers to use for theory opportunities, and then just generally for our families to use, because they have a lot of gap between tech access. There's a gap there for a lot of our families to be able to really have abilities to go online and do what they need to do as a family. So this lab is also a resource, just a technology resource for our community.
Yeah. Okay. And I don't want to sort of assume this, but I'm sort of thinking that if you're serving primarily low-income students in this city, mm-hmm. that it's predominantly children of color. Is that correct?
Yeah. So about 85% of our students are kids of color.
Uh-huh. Okay. And how does it more or less break down between, like, say, Black, Latino, and Native American kids?
Hi. So, more specifically, we work with 81% Hispanic.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. And then, that's really, 4% African American. I think it's 4% Caucasian, and the rest are kind of multiracial.
So the fact that you have 80%, how does that work out? Like, why is that? Is it because of where you're located, or what?
You know, I think there's just been a beautiful synergy between Rosie's House and the Latino community for the last 25 years, and we've really worked to be inclusive and multi-generational kind of support from the Latino community that has kind of helped facilitate that high engagement.
Yeah.
A lot of word of mouth is how people come to our program.
Okay.
So I think that also might have something to do with our numbers.
Yeah, there's a lot of word of mouth in the Latino community. Yeah. I know that personally, yeah.
Also just, you know, really language barrier that's not there. Half of our staff speak Spanish. All of our materials are in English and Spanish.
That was Becky Bell Ballard, CEO of Rosie's House, which is hosting a grand opening celebration November 5th at its new facility at 919 East Jefferson near downtown Phoenix. We'll present part two of this report next week on Vanguardia America.